How would you answer that question? How would you fill in that blank? My life is, there's a whole bunch of different words we could put there. If things are going well, we might put things like, my life is great, my life is good, my life is successful, my life is blessed. We might put down, my life is joyful. There's a lot of good ways we could finish that sentence. Or, if circumstances are not quite so good, we might put down, my life is stressed. My life is depressing. My life is challenging. My life is tiring. All sorts of different ways we could finish that sentence. And on a good day, you might finish it one way, or if on a difficult, challenging day, you might finish it with something different. But what I want to talk about tonight is a book of the Bible that talks about finishing that sentence on a positive note, even when things are very challenging. I want to talk about the book of Philippians. Turn in your Bibles to the book of Philippians. We're going to do Philippians chapter 1 this evening. And the title of this sermon this evening is Finding Joy on Stormy Days. How we can find joy and happiness when things around us are not so good. When things are gloomy and stormy and there's challenges in our life. How we can look at that and we can find the joy. And the reason Philippians is such a great book for this is because you see that in Paul. In the book of Philippians, here you have, Paul is writing this book from prison. So here he is sitting in this prison cell. And the way I kind of imagine Paul from reading the book of Acts and from reading his other letters, I see Paul as this high energy kind of person who he is just going and doing all these things. You read the book of Acts and he's going to this place and he's teaching and he's going to this place and he's teaching and he's starting this church and he's talking to these people and he's helping these people over here and then he's building some tents over there on the side. He's just got all this stuff going on. At the same time, he's writing these letters. All this stuff happening. And then all that, as he's suddenly confined to prison, all of a sudden, he's stuck in one place. He's not traveling around the whole world anymore preaching the gospel. He's sitting right there chained to a guard. To me, that would be very depressing. I can't imagine going from a life that is that big and busy to a life that is so constrained. And then, on top of that, you have who the letter's written to. It's written to this church in Philippi, and these Christians are apparently being persecuted. We don't know the extent of that persecution, but it's alluded to in different places in that letter that they're going through some kind of a persecution. We don't know if that was extremely violent, if that was extremely difficult, but we do know it was a persecution that was bad enough that Paul needed to write about it. And so here, it's from a man who's persecuted so much he's in prison, written to a church that's going through some kind of persecution. And yet, it is such a joyful letter. The word rejoice is used over and over and over again throughout that book. And it's used at these critical junctures throughout the book. It seems to set this theme of the whole story of the book of Philippians, this theme of rejoicing. So how do you do that? How do you rejoice when it's stormy and it's difficult and it's challenging? Well, let's read the book and find out. So let's start here. I want to start in verse 12 is where we're going to begin. And we're going to read the section here starting in verse 12 of Philippians chapter 1. I want you to know, brothers, that what has happened to me has really served to advance the gospel so that it has become known throughout the whole imperial guard and to all the rest that my imprisonment is for Christ. And most of the brothers, having become confident in the Lord by my imprisonment, are much more bold to speak the word without fear. Some indeed preach Christ from envy and rivalry, but others from goodwill. The latter do it out of love, knowing that I am put here for the defense of the gospel. The former proclaim Christ out of selfish ambition, not sincerely, but thinking to afflict me in my imprisonment. What then? Only that in every way, whether in pretense or in truth, Christ is proclaimed, and in that I rejoice. Yes, and I will rejoice, for I know that through your prayers and the help of the Spirit of Jesus Christ, this will turn out for my deliverance, as it is my eager expectation and hope that I will not be at all ashamed, but that with full courage, now as always, Christ will be honored in my body, whether by life or by death. For to me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. If I am to live in the flesh, that means fruitful labor for me. Yet which I shall choose, I cannot tell. I am hard pressed between the two. My desire is to depart and to be with Christ, for that is far better. But to remain in the flesh is more necessary on your account. Convinced of this, I know that I will remain and continue with you all for your progress and joy in the faith, so that in me you may have ample cause to glory in Christ Jesus because of my coming to you again. All right, let's stop there. So how is it that Paul, as he goes through all of these challenges, as he sits there in that prison cell, how can he write something so positive? I mean, you read that and it's just, it lifts you up. It's such a positive, happy outlook on things. Well, I want to start by talking about where his focus is. What is Paul focusing on? And seeing that, what is it that makes him happy? What is it that makes him so joyful in this situation? Well, when we look at ourselves, what do we typically focus on? What are the things in our lives that lift us up and make us joyful and happy? It may be that for me, maybe the thing that makes me joyful is reading a good book. If I read a book that I really enjoy, that's going to make me happy that day. Or maybe you might say, well, what makes you happy is when you get to go out to eat with some other people and you get to enjoy some nice food together, that's something that makes you happy. Or you might think, maybe what makes me happy is when I accomplish my goals. When I've got a goal and I accomplish it, that makes me happy that day. That brings some joy to me to be able to accomplish that goal. Or maybe taking a relaxing vacation. That brings some joy to be able to just settle down and relax a little bit. Well, all of those things have one thing in common, that they focus on me. And those things, they may make me happy in certain situations, but the challenge is, if my situation is not so good, those things aren't going to make me happy anymore. If my happiness is limited to my little condition here, well, then all of a sudden, when my condition's not good, I'm not going to be happy. If I don't have that good book to read, if I don't have enough money to go on the relaxing vacation this year, or if I'm failing to accomplish my goals, I am not going to find anything to be joyful in. Paul doesn't seem to limit his joy to those kinds of situations. He goes further than that. Well, maybe if we went further, maybe my joy could be in seeing the accomplishments of other people. When someone else accomplishes their goal, that could give me joy, focusing more on others. Maybe I could focus on helping someone else, serving someone else. If I go out of my way to serve someone, that could bring me happiness. Or maybe it's the seeing a child or a grandchild or someone young maturing and accomplishing things. Maybe that would bring me joy. And so here, if we expanded it to looking at others, well, those things sound nice. And Paul certainly does that in this letter. You see that he's very concerned about other people. That's why he writes the letter to the Philippians. And he has this great desire to see them serving the Lord. And he takes great joy in seeing them serve the Lord. So that's certainly part of it. But Paul expands it even bigger than that. Paul expands it to let's look at the verse here. Here in verse 12, let's read that again. I want you to know, brothers, that what has happened to me has really served to advance the gospel, so that it has become known throughout the whole imperial guard and to all the rest that my imprisonment is for Christ. So here he is sitting in a prison cell, and we're going to see how much he's rejoicing. But here the things he talks about is advancing the gospel. People are hearing about Christ. His focus wasn't on himself. And his focus wasn't just focused on the people around him. He had a focus that was even bigger than that. He was focused on Christ. And you'll see that throughout this letter. The things that make him happy and joyful are when he sees that Christ is magnified. It's so much bigger than any circumstance here on earth because he's looking to Christ. In each of these situations, he could be here sitting in this prison cell thinking, I'm so depressed and so miserable because of the situation I'm in. But instead, he's looking to Christ and thinking about, in some way, Christ is magnified through this. That's the difference in perspective. So let's think about that. How do we focus on Christ? If my focus is outward and focused upward on Christ, how does that change my thinking? Well, you see that here with Paul, how he's focused on things like teaching the guards. Here he talks about how it's given him this opportunity to the entire guard here. Caesar's guard is learning about the gospel. He's focused on being bold, the people who are more bold to speak the gospel. And he's focused on things that are Christ-centered rather than him-centered. So how does that work? Well, first of all, we see in that the way that Paul views the present. It's going to change our perspective of the present, of how I look around things right now. Paul had spent years traveling around, and that could have been extremely depressing for him. But as he enlarges his perspective, here, rather than focusing on, I'm not able to do all these things right here, now he focuses on how is Christ magnified in this new situation? Now, you might look at that and you might say, well, Paul, you were doing all these different things for Christ, and now you're stuck in a prison cell. You can write some letters, but you could do that before. You could talk to some guards, but, you know, you talked to a lot more people than guards before. So really, Paul, if you're going to be realistic, I think it's kind of taken a step towards the negative here with what's happened with your life situation. And Paul could have done that, but instead, he looked out a little bit further. If I look at just my little tiny sphere of influence, just a little tiny thing that I can see, the people within my eyesight, I might start to get discouraged. But Paul had a way of looking even bigger than that. And so although he was stuck there in prison, he was thinking, you know what? There are people who see me right now in prison, and they're encouraged by that. And that imprisonment is encouraging them to go out and preach the gospel. And it may have been people who Paul would never, ever even meet. And yet he can think about, and he can take joy in, they're being encouraged by my situation, and the gospel is spreading more and more because I'm sitting right here in this prison right now. He was able to broaden his perspective enough to see that. Well, not only that, but you might say, okay, well, so you could broaden your perspective, but what if you look at your situation and it's such a terrible, dire situation, you really can't see any way that Christ is glorified? And that happens sometimes. Well, things were going great and then something tragic happens in our life. And we look at that and we say, I'd like to be positive about this, but there is absolutely nothing good about this situation. It was so tragic what just happened to me or to my family or this person. There's no way that Christ is glorified at all in that. And in that situation, Paul looks around and he finds a way that he can use it for Christ's glory. Now, it wouldn't have happened on its own, but Paul creatively thinks of, what could I do about this situation to use it for Christ's glory? And here he's stuck in prison. He can't move around, but he's got someone right next to him. They're chained right there to him. There's that guard. He can start talking to the guard about the gospel. And he does. Here he's got this captive audience chained to him. He can preach to them all day long if he wants to. And it sounds like he used that opportunity. And that's such an example for us that when we get into these challenging situations, it takes some creativity sometimes, but thinking, how can I use this difficulty to glorify Christ? Is there anything that I could do differently to use this situation and advance it for Christ's glory? And that's going to take some thinking and some work. But then when we do that, it's going to put our focus all on Christ where it needs to be. But it wasn't just the present here. It was also the future, Paul's perspective of the future. So here, after he talks about his situation in prison, then he talks about, well, am I going to be released or not? Now, the future is difficult because it's scary. The future is scary because we don't know what's going to happen. There's all this uncertainty and instability when you start talking about the future. We can plan and we can plan and we can plan, but when we talk about the storms of life, we're talking about times when all those plans get disrupted and we were really hoping to go this way, but now things have changed and I don't even know which way we're going to go now. You know, it could end up this way and that would be awful, or it could work out this way and I don't know if I'd like that either. And that's where we start to get worried and concerned, and there's all this instability. Well, here's Paul, and he's in that kind of situation. He says he might get released. And if he got released, there'd be the great advantage that he would get to be with the other Christians there. Or he might be executed. Wow, talk about two completely different possibilities. How's he supposed to take joy in knowing that those two things are on the line? He could be released and go to be with other Christians, or he could be executed. Well, he finds a way of finding joy in that. And what he does is he looks at both circumstances and he finds the ways that Christ is glorified in each. Now, if he gets released, well, then he can go and he can go encourage the other Christians. He can visit the Christians in Philippi and he can encourage them and he can preach Christ to them and he can see how Christ would be glorified in that. But then what if he's executed? Well, then he gets to be with Christ. And you can't get any better than that. And so here, Paul can look at each of his situations, even when they're dire, he can look at each of these situations and he can pick out, in that circumstance, I know that's difficult, but here's something that's going to bring glory to Christ. And because he can pick that out, he can look at his future with joy. He doesn't know exactly how it's going to turn out, but he can still look at it with joy. So that's how Paul gives himself as an example. An example of, here's how to deal with these challenging situations. But then at the end of the chapter, he's going to turn this around and say, now here's how this affects you guys. Here's how I'm handling my challenge. Now let's talk about your challenge, is what Paul is going to say. So let's read that. Verse 27. Only let your manner of life be worthy of the gospel of Christ, so that whether I come and see you or am absent, I may hear of you that you are standing firm in one spirit, with one mind, striving side by side for the faith of the gospel, and not frightened in anything by your opponents. This is a clear sign to them of their destruction, but of your salvation, and that from God. For it has been granted to you that for the sake of Christ, you should not only believe in him, but also suffer for his sake. Engaged in the same conflict that you saw I had, and now hear that I still have. So here, Paul's laid out this idea of keeping our perspective on Christ. If we can keep our focus on Christ, it's going to change everything. It's going to allow us to rejoice and be joyful in these situations. Now, in this last paragraph, he shows how that's going to work out in practical ways, how it's going to change the way that I live. If I change my perspective, here's how I should live differently. And there's three things that I see in this last paragraph that Paul shows the Christians, here's how you need to live differently. The first one is they need to stand firm. That's the way he says it in verse 27. He talks about how I may hear of you that you are standing firm in one spirit. Now, when we go through challenges, the temptation is not to stand firm. When we go through these sort of challenges, the temptation is to turn and run, to get discouraged and to want to quit, to get depressed and I don't want to do that anymore. It's those kinds of times when we're going through those storms that we want to quit serving. We want to quit praying as we used to do. We want to quit. We quit growing like we need to because we're so weighed down by this challenge. Paul says, don't do that. Instead, stand firm. And stand firm is kind of reminds me of a battle kind of picture of as the enemy is approaching, you stand your ground. No matter what happens, you're standing there. There's some great Old Testament battle stories. And one of the ones that I like that really shows this picture is at the end of 2 Samuel, there's a list of David's mighty men. And it goes through and it lists the top guys in King David's army. And it gives little tidbits, tiny short stories, to illustrate how valiant these men were. And there's one man where the story is, he and the Israelite army were in this field of lentils. And all of a sudden the Philistines approach, and this huge Philistine army comes. And they completely overtake the Israelites, and the Israelites turn and run. And so here's all the Israelite army fleeing, but there was one man who didn't turn and run. And he stood there, he stopped there, and he stood his ground right in the middle of that field of lentils. And he single-handedly stood there and fought that entire army. And it said that God brought about a great victory that day through him. When everybody was turning and running the other direction, this man planted his feet and he didn't run. He stood his ground. And Paul's saying, that's what you need to be like. You need to stand firm. When these storms and temptations come, we need to not be moved. Now, the way to do that, again, is to focus on Christ. If our foundation is on Christ, then we're going to be able to stand strong because these things won't be pushing us around. Another story that illustrates that is the parable that Jesus tells about the wise man building his house on the rock. When here he builds his house on the rock on Jesus' teaching, and when those storms of life comes, he stays firm. That house stands strong because it's not going to be moved because of its foundation. If my foundation is on Christ, then when those storms come, I'm not going to be blown around. I'm going to stand firm. But if my foundation is on my finances or my family or my abilities or whatever other kinds of things that I might build my hopes on or put my securities in, all those things can shift and turn, and pretty soon I've got a house on the sand and it's collapsing. But if my hopes and my strength is in Christ, then I'll be able to stand firm even when those storms arise. And then Paul says, not only do we stand firm, but we need to work together. He says this in a number of ways. He says in verse 27, he says, standing firm in one spirit with one mind, striving side by side for the faith of the gospel. So we've got one spirit, one mind, side by side. This big emphasis on let's work together to do this. Now, to do that, we have to know each other, and we have to, when those storms come, those need to pull us closer together. A lot of times, those storms drive us further apart. When I get discouraged, I just want to retreat and be by myself. Instead, Paul's saying, those storms should pull us together. We should all cluster together when these challenges happen. And you see that very vividly in the book of Acts. When we look at the early church, they were going through challenges, and those challenges seemed to pull them together. Right near the beginning of the book, when the church is first formed, and they're going through their first challenge as Peter and John are arrested, as soon as the scene turns back to the early church, what it says is they were together and they were praying. It says Acts chapter 4, verse 24, and when they heard it, they lifted their voices together to God. And then it has this prayer that the church prayed together. So when they went through these challenges, the church came together, and they all fell down on their knees together before God. They came together, and they came to God. And then you see that throughout the rest of the book. At the end of that chapter, towards the end, it ends with, "Now the full number of those who believed were of one heart and soul," emphasizing that this church was working together. And then later on, when Peter's arrested, you see the exact same thing. Here, a large group of Christians gather at Mary's house to pray, as Peter is in jail at that time. So here you have, in each of these situations, when problems hit, people come together, and a lot of times it's coming together, coming closer to God, because that's the way that should work. And we need to have that same kind of attitude. Rather than these challenges and these storms of life causing us to fight with each other or causing friction between each other, instead it should bring closer unity to us as Christians, in that when we go through hard times, we come together. But not only do we come together, but we learn to not be afraid. That's what he says here in verse 28, "and not frightened in anything by your opponents." Here they are being persecuted, and there's all kinds of opportunity for fear, all kinds of challenges here where I don't know what's going to happen. Again, it's that fear of the future. It's the fear of my life. What if something happens to me or happens to my family? All sorts of things to be afraid of. And he says, don't be afraid. And that, again, comes from focusing on Christ. A story that illustrates this so well is that the story of Peter walking on the water. When Peter was out there and he was walking on the water, as long as he kept his eyes on Christ, things were okay. But then when he saw the wind and the waves, he started to get scared, and that's when he started to sink. When we keep our eyes on Christ, we don't have to be scared. We know he's right there. He's taking care of things. Things are going well. But when we take our eyes off and we start looking at the waves and the wind, that's when we get scared and things start to fall apart. And so Paul emphasizes here not being afraid. And sometimes those fears seem so legitimate and so real. And Paul's saying, instead of focusing on all these things that you're scared about, focus on Christ. How can he be glorified? What can we do to glorify him? Well, those are the three things that Paul wants us to do, how we can live this out in our lives, how we can have joy, and how we can learn to rejoice in all of these different situations. Well, let's go back now, as we end here, let's go back to the question we started with. My life is. What is my life? What word would describe it? Well, I know how Paul would answer that question. He actually tells us in verse 21. Paul says in verse 21, "For to me to live is Christ, and to die is gain." Paul would fill in that blank like that. For me to live is Christ. That's what described Paul's life. That's what consumed him every day, was this focus on Christ. And that's why when those storms of life came, his emotions weren't going up and down like this. Instead, he could just put his eyes on Christ because Christ was dependable. He could trust in Christ's faithfulness. And everything about Paul's life, you look at it, it was all about Christ. His concerns, all of his activity, the suffering he was going through, everything was all motivated towards Christ. And when we fix our whole entire life to where it's all pointed towards Christ, then we can have joy. We can rejoice in whatever circumstance we're in. If you are not yet a Christian, and this is an opportunity where you can come forward and you can dedicate your life to Christ, if you're subject to that invitation, then please come forward as we stand and sing.